Anyway, it was about 1942. My office at that time was in 308 Raymond Building.
In where?
308 Raymond Building.
Oh, okay, I remember that.
And I had a little office split in two, one from the front office, and I was right next behind it. Didn't have a library or nothing like that. And I did some tax work. I did a lot of tax work back in those days. And I was doing the tax for a client of mine who was a merchant, ran a grocery store on Weller Avenue and Plank Road. And I had done his tax return, whatever it was. It was his income tax return. And knowing something else. But anyway, what happened was that I had a file on it, and I got to the office about right after lunch. I'd come home to lunch, went back to the office. Patsy was still there. And here was this guy with the tax return, with the file in front of him, leaning with the telephone to his ear on Patsy's desk. And he's chewing my client out. I said, what the hell are you doing? Give me that file and get your ass out of my office.
And he was with the IRS?
Yeah. You think I'm scared of them people? I ain't scared of them.
He just walked into your office?
He walked into my office. There was a client of mine from Mississippi. His son had been involved in an automobile accident or something. And they were sitting in the office waiting. And they told me that this guy came in and demanded that Patsy give him the file. He had my file.
Now, I'm sure Patsy, you know, he
probably scared the daylights out of her.
She probably threatened her.
Well, of course.
That's what the FBI does.
That's what all cops do.
I would tell you about the time that they wanted a statement from Teddy Martin, because Teddy was the sheriff, of course, but he had pulled a gun, it's not too many years ago, pulled a gun on a black man on Highway 61 when Teddy stopped him, so he went and complained to the FBI, and so they were investigating it. So they called Teddy and wanted to give it, wanted a statement from Teddy. Well, Teddy made arrangements to, meet him at the Capitol House. And at that time, they had a parking lot and parking garage. So Teddy and I drive in, and I get out the car with Teddy. We walk into the lobby, and there were two FBI men. I knew them, they knew me, they knew Teddy. When they saw me and Teddy, I think Litchfield were on one of them.
Who?
Litchfield.
Litchfield?
Yeah. And I could see that jaw drop down to their knees. And when we got to them, well, we're sorry, we don't want to.
We don't want to. They thought he was stupid enough to show up by himself?
Well, that's the way they operate. Well, and then, of course, then later on, one of the assistant U.S. attorneys said, well, Sam, why don't you go ahead and give me a statement to Great White Fathers in Washington, and we'll get things cleared up. I said, you can tell these Great White Fathers in Washington to go to hell from me. I'll never get old, of course, and I shouldn't mention the name.
Yes, you should.
But Mrs. Marshy.
Marshy?
Her, she worked. She was Jack Grimio's secretary when Jack was Attorney General. She called me at 6 o'clock one evening, and said, Sam, the FBI wants to come in and question me. Well, I knew what was going on because Jack was handling all this integration litigation at that time. And they were, I'm sure, I knew they wanted probably question about this integration problem. So I walked, so I said, okay, I'll be there in a few minutes. I was still at the office. I drove, she lived on the corner of Broussard. And was it Longwood?
Longwood.
Longwood. drove up, I specifically, mentally, said to myself, see if there are any vehicles parked anywhere near our house. There wasn't one on Broussard Street. There wasn't one on Longwood. I said, well, they ain't got you yet. So I drove up the driveway, which was at the back of the house on Longwood. And when I got to the door, Emil, the son, met me. He said, it's the same day here already. I said, what? They ain't got no car around this area. So what they must have done, they must have parked the car or had somebody drop them off, or if they parked the car, it was over there by Webb Park somewhere. So when I walked in, of course, what they usually, what the first thing they do, because I have my experience, reach down in their wallet and they flash the wallet and the badge and the number. I said,
don't impress me, man.
One of them was Barron. I remember Barron was one of them. I don't remember who the other one was. And I said, look, fellas, I know who you all are. I know you. You know me. Well, since she's got a lawyer, we don't ask any questions. Right? They know, I mean.
How many poor people do they scare the shit out
of? That's exactly correct.
Well, you know, because they're FBI. You know, I watch TV. I see what they do.
No, I've told you this before. If Martha Stewart had called me, she'd have never stayed today in jail.
What about Jim Brown? Was he stupid enough to actually talk to somebody without... Because remember, he got convicted of lying to a federal agent.
Yeah.
You know, a federal agent who has no notes, no tape statements, no nothing, but he was convicted of lying to him.
Right.
Did he speak to a federal agent without an attorney present? Was he stupid enough to do that?
Let me tell you.
If he'd have represented him, that wouldn't have happened either.
Damn right.
I represented Sam Collada. Well, Sam Collada was in the insurance wrecking business. He had wrecked cars and sold parts off wrecked cars. And he was located on Airline Highway. I didn't represent him in the tax matter. B.B. Taylor was handling the case. So when they filed the criminal charges against him, against Sam, B.B. asked me to help him try the case. So B.B. and I tried the case together. And what they did was, and not, don't want to be critical of my good friend B.B. Taylor Jr. because he's dead now, but B.B. was a good friend of mine. And but B.B. and Sam went and met with the agents, and the agents made self-serving declarations in favor of them in presence of Sam. In other words, they're accusing Sam, well, you did this, that, and the other. And Sam remained silent, and so did B.B. So that made the rule of law is if you don't object at the time it's made, then it's construed against you.
Oh.
I mean, those are the kind of things that you got to know about. If you don't know it, you ain't going to make the objection at the proper time. That's the reason why when people call me, don't talk, man. And I'll never forget when I represented Ortlieb, it was just a few years ago, and one of his lawyers called me and he told me that, and I said, well, where are you? Oh, in my car. I said, kablum. You don't talk to me on the telephone about any case. Not a criminal case, anyway. No, indeed.
See, I tell my clients that all the time. Although, if someone is, I make sure that...
It's a criminal case.
If somebody's talking to me...
Forget it.
You know, and I say...
I don't trust them all the way, as long as I can remember it. FBI.
I'm your lawyer, and I just want to make sure it's noted that I'm your lawyer and you're talking to me concerning my representation of you. I always do that.
I don't even do that. You don't talk to me. I don't want to hear one goddamn thing on the telephone about your case. Don't you dare. You want to talk to me, come to my office.
Come to my office.
And I'll talk to you. No, indeed.
We have to do a whole chapter on Teddy Martin, Papa. He's got some great stories about Teddy Martin.
Well, Teddy Martin was something else. but he was good to me.
Who? I've never heard you mention B.B. Taylor before, ever.
I got two neckties that B.B. gave me, and I call them the B.B. Taylor ties. B.B. and I were good friends, and he's a hell of a nice guy. He was to me. I never got too friendly with his daddy. But B.B., so I am told, B.B. was a wrestler and a boxer or whatever. And my recollection of the story that was told me about B.B., and who, if you don't ask me, who told it to me. But he went on a tramp steamer ship when he was a youngster. And they tell me he would get in a corner at some bar and he'd take on the whole crowd.
Was he as big as his grandson?
Oh, he'd be, yeah, no, his grand, not his grandson. You think about it, is it his son, B.B. Jr.?
Is it his son, B.B.?
The tall guy?
Junior? Yeah, the real tall guy. That's his son?
That's his son.
Oh, okay, I didn't realize he was that old. He's tall, he's a big man.
Yeah. Now, B.B. was a big man, but he was not that tall. B.B. must have been about maybe. B.B. might have been 6 feet. But B.B. Taylor, the third, I think, is what he is.
Yeah, I think
well,
he is
he's about 6 feet, 6 inches or something like
that. See, that tall? He's tall.
He's a tall guy, yeah. And B.B. bought the old Triad building that's on the corner of 3rd in Florida, across from the State National Life Building.
Where Dr. Walker used to be?
Where Dr. Walker used to be. It was a Triad building. And the Cassidy Zoos, I think, owned it. I could have bought that building at one time for $40,000. But, that was during the Depression.
Oh.
And that's when 3rd Street wasn't. You could have bought all of 3rd Street for $40,000. But then when B.B. bought it, he talked to me and asked me if I thought it would be nice to have the building named the Taylor Building after his daddy. And I thought it was a good idea.
So it's named the Taylor Building now?
That's the Taylor Building.
Oh.
Then when B.B.
bought it. They still own it.
He remodeled the building. Did some work to it, and I remember one day I looked out the window, and I could see flame coming out of the window at the stairwell, and Dr. Walker was in there at that time, and I don't know who called the fire department, but the fire department kind of put the fire out. It wasn't a big, it turned out not to be a very costly fire. And another day, that's when I was on the 3rd floor, and I could look down and stay. I could, you know, see 3rd Street, Florida Street. I'm looking out there, and I'm seeing some guy running. And I'm seeing some guy running behind him. Then I hear some shots fired. And then next thing you know, I found out that it was a soldier, and it was an MP chasing him. And he ended up across the street, our building, now that they remodeled it, where the Fresh Louisiana National Bank was.
Yeah, where Danny McGlynn used to be.
Yeah, where Danny McGlynn and
Stonehenge is there.
Well, they cornered him in that alleyway between those two buildings. But there was this MP chasing him, shooting, firing the pistol up in the air on Florida Street.
Now, wait. Was this during what, like World War II or something?
Yeah, it was during World War II.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Must have been AWOL.
Yeah, it must have been AWOL. I'll tell you this about AWOL. There was a young man in jail here, and he was, I think he was in AWOL, but he was AWOL, and they had him in jail, and he escaped. And so they were looking for him. And I'll never forget, one day he called me. It was at lunchtime, I was at home. Called me and told me that he was in town, I think it was. Well, first he called me from Chicago. And I told him, you ought to come on into Baton Rouge and give yourself up or whatever it was. Anyway, he finally showed up. He caught a bus and came down and called me when he got here. I asked him where he was. I think he must have been at the bus station. I said, well, just go up to my office and tell my secretary Patsy was waiting for me to let you go into my private office and don't let anybody, don't talk to anybody. You think you can make it? Oh, yeah, I'll make it. So he made it. Sure enough, he got there. So after that, I went, when I got to the office, I talked to him. I said, well, okay, let's go give yourself in. So I walked to the jail. There's a driveway underneath the jail, I mean, underneath the courthouse, the old courthouse where the city court is now. Mm-hmm. And so I walked, went through there because I was going to catch the jail elevator and go up to jail and surrender him in the jail. Well, after I got on the elevator, I got on the elevator, I heard bang, bang, and I thought it was the iron door of the downstairs that had been banged. So while I'm upstairs in the jail now, I'm on the fourth floor in the jail with surrendering him, and I'm trying to think of Zena, was it Zena? Who was a jailer at the time. I wasn't seeing it. It was another guy who was a deputy shaking my client's hair and saying he wasn't the one. In the meantime, now we go back to the farm. There was a young man by the name of Schust who was an MP stationed in the little cubicle downstairs near the door, and that's where he kept his office as an MP. There was a fellow by the name of Oscar Alillo, who was the head janitor of the building. He was in charge of the building. And here comes Oscar off of the elevator, because where we were at the desk was not too far from the elevator. He's got Schust's gun in his hand and Schust by the arm. The bang bang I heard was Schust's gun.
Who was he shooting at?
Shooting at the wall, gone berserk. If he had seen me and that guy,
oh Lord,
that he was looking for, I don't know what would have happened.
Oh my gosh.
That always makes me wonder how close a call I could have had. I don't know, but Schust, he was a nice kid, nice young man. But unfortunately, he went berserk. I got stir crazy down there in the little cubicle.
Oh, he'd go crazy today.
Yeah.
I like little cubicles.
Oh, I went into today to cash a check at Hibernia on Government Street. They've been putting all kinds of cubicles and glass up, but you know, it's kind of halfway made. Today I walk in, everybody's got glass all around them. In that bank now. The other day when I was there was a black man on a motor scooter,
one of those little rascal things?
Yeah. What do you call them?
Little rascals?
Or a moped. Some people call them mopeds.
It was not a moped. It was a motor wheelchair.
Oh.
And he came in. You know, some of these people, unfortunately, we have handicaps, but they sometimes take advantage. So he comes and he's riding around in the bank. Next thing you know, he finagles himself in back where Mike is, in the corner. And he had no business there other than to have a list on a little table out in the lobby for people to check in. Somebody comes to the secretary check him who's next and things of that kind. So evidently he wasn't gonna wait, and he maneuvered his wheelchair into Mike's office. While Mike had somebody else in there.
Ooh, they don't like that.
And then of course, one of the creeps of the week, as they call them, it was a few days ago I'd gone to Calandro's. I keep you all night with all this crap. But anyway, I go to Calandro's. And there's the parking spaces galore. And when I say car park, they had the least cars I ever saw on the Calandro's parking lot that afternoon. And there in between two cars, with their buggies in front of them, are two white ladies talking. Some guy comes in a white truck, and he drives into where those women are. But all the parking places, all over the place, that he could have gone to, all he had to do is go one more car and he could have parked where there were no other vehicles. And there he goes, chased those women out of the parking spot so he could park. And I tried to see who in the hell he was, but I was probably just distracted, or he probably never got out of the truck. Because I was tempted to go to him and tell him, you know, where he learned ethics or whatnot.
They don't have them anymore.
Getting ornery, huh, Papa?
Well, I mean, you know, this is really, I mean...
People are rude.
I'm tempted to write a note to Smiley. I mean, there is there was no excuse for that, whoever that individual was, to more or less chase those women out of the parking area, parking spot, when he could have parked 5-6 feet the width of a vehicle, and he'd had another 10 parking spaces.
Well, in Calandra's parking lot isn't that big to begin with.
It's not like so, you have a far distance to
get. Well, I'm talking about, but what I'm trying to tell you is that he had, there must not have been, that I can remember, 10 to 15 cars parked on the whole lot. Wasn't that many cars on that lot that day.
Hmm.
Which reminded me, I was going to call Celia about my, we've discovered that the milk has been turned sour in the refrigerator, probably. There's two jugs that's happened to.
Are you keeping the refrigerator cold enough?
Well, maybe
it's on the coldest.
Huh?
It's on the coldest.
I'll put it on the coldest.
Because I noticed that Mama's refrigerator does the same thing. Mama's, I mean, the day of the, you know, spoil date or sell-by date, Mama's is already spoiled. I can keep mine for 3-4 days afterwards.
Me too.
Well, yeah, I used to do that. That's what I'm saying. I need to call the man and come check it. And I noticed that it sounds louder than it used to.
Well, I've noticed the, speaking of, wine isn't cold enough. So
wine,
you want a glass?
Wine is cold.
One glass? Okay,
I don't know. Go ahead and get it down. See, it's cold. The wine is cold.
Stop.
Oh, I just had to bring that up. You know.
I'm waiting for my husband to call.
Kim, you want something to drink, baby?
Kim, you want a glass of wine with us?
Yeah. Well, what kind is it? Red or white?
White. He has some red.
I'll drink some red.
I think, don't you have red, Daddy?
I don't know that red is that red. Who opened that red?
What red?
There's a bottle of red in there sparkling.
In the refrigerator? You don't put red in the refrigerator?
On the bottom. But that's not...